Oilers. We're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Battle Red Radio. I'm at Weston tonight for the Super 2021 Houston Texans season preview. We have Rivers McCown. We have L4 Blitzer, as you know, Scott. Yep. And we have Sports Radio 610's morning show host, Sean Pendergrass. How are you guys doing tonight?
Awesome.
So our big plan here is to preview the Texan season. We're going to start talking to Sean because Sean's been a real strong, brave man. He's been out in the heat with the bucket hat, hanging out with David Kelly, watching everything that's going on out there. And so we want to get some of an inside opinion and what he's been seeing instead of merely just like regurgitating things we've been seeing on Twitter and clips of Jordan Akins making catches over Christian Kirksey, you know. There's a lot more to life than that.
And Matt, just to be clear, I don't go bucket hat. I go raw. I go sunscreen on top of the head, baby.
There you go.
I'm in it. Dude, I'm all in for 2021. No bucket hat for me, man.
What about you, Scott? Do you go bucket hat if you're outside in 102 degrees?
No, I got to go hats. I mean, I could put sunscreen up there after a shave particularly, but it's like, nah, you got to have the hat. I mean,
come on, man.
Yeah, but the problem is I've fried my head enough that it's starting to catch up to me. So you just got to – I have to accept reality. But
no, I'll definitely get skin cancer on my scalp at some point, but at least I'm comfortable outside. It's all good.
Well, at least
you don't realize how much hair absorbs all that sweat, too. I just got to say
true. Totally true.
That's something you don't learn until you go that point. So just
yep.
Everyone out in the audience, be careful. That's why you keep handkerchiefs around in your back pocket in the summer. Just saying.
That's it, man. That's it.
Well, at least you know that Sean's tough. I mean, Sean's tough. We're going to finally be smart and dependable and selfless throughout the next
selfless,
35
yes.
minutes or so.
Make sure selfless.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, Sean, our first question for you is, I guess O'Brien was there for 6 years. And so 6 years, you had to we got to cover him, watch his brand football, watch him talk about, you know, being smart and, you know, keeping up the clock and being fast and pace and control the entire operation after – going from head coach to general manager. What's been the biggest difference between a Bill O'Brien training camp and a David Coley training camp through like the first, you know, 4 weeks of camp or so?
Yeah, I would say there's a few things. I would say there's just some very basic things that are just kind of like the Coley's practices are longer than O'Brien's, which is weird because I feel like they're more efficient as well. Like they're just – The O'Brien practices, some of this may be because we're better informed at practice than we've been the last few years. They've got these big scoreboards now out there, these huge video boards out of practice where they actually show replays of plays during the 11-on-11. They have a clock that shows how much time is left in each little session that they're doing. They have a graphic that shows exactly what the drills are that they're working on at that point. So some of this may be because we're just better informed as media that, oh, what are they doing this session here? We look up and they go, okay, well, they're 2.5 minutes into, kick return, you know, team or jog through or team three, which is the third session of 11-on-11 and stuff like that. Typically, every practice has 15 different sessions that they do. So we're way better informed as to exactly what it is they're doing out there as media. So some of how I feel about how better run the practices are maybe just because we know better as to what exactly it is they're doing, how much is left in each drill, how quickly they're getting from drill to drill. But it does feel like the practices are a little more crisp with Cully. It feels like there's more teaching going on with the assistant coaches with Cully than there was with O'Brien. There's a whole lot less screaming with the head coach going on at a David Cully practice than there was with O'Brien. But that's not to imply that Cully is like a soft touch at practice. Like he gets on guys from time to time. I think he put out a kind of like the image he had of Cully out there after the first few press conferences my impression was this guy might be a doddering old man out there that's just out there like he won a contest to be the head coach. And it hasn't been that. But I feel like the practices are definitely longer. They haven't gone inside other than one day where there were torrential downpours. I feel like there's more hard work getting done during a Cully practice than there was during an O'Brien practice. There's definitely veterans who are practicing a whole lot more under Cully than they did under O'Brien. By like O'Brien's second or third year, if you were a veteran who was there for 5 or 6 years, you were barely practicing at all compared to Cully, where like Laramie Tunsil's been out there every day practicing. You know what I mean? Like, I think in an O'Brien camp, Tunsil would have been a guy they would have held out quite a bit. So I do feel like there's more getting done. Some of that may just be Darwinism kicking in and realizing, man, we need to get a lot done because we're not a very good football team right now.
Yeah, yeah, that's also kind of the idea of the competition too that they have. You know, like they have as many players on the roster and try and push each other, that sort of thing. And the other thing that's important about David Cully is that he knows what works, and he saw it worked in, you know, Baltimore and Buffalo and Kansas City, and you know, he's bringing that here to Houston too. What's the meanest thing you've ever heard him say to a player so far? I know you kind of mentioned that he's a lot tougher than you might expect, you know, from how his press conferences are.
Yeah, okay, I'll say this: I've not heard him curse yet. And usually by like the fifth minute of training camp, O'Brien's cursed like four times. So there's another difference. Like the language, it's a Cully practice is more like PG at worst. Like an O'Brien practice is definitely like NC-17. So there's that. I would say like the scrimmage, the Saturday night scrimmage that they had a couple of weeks ago, 2 weeks ago from today, was probably the first time we saw that Cully had a side to him where he was just not going to be very tolerant of mistakes. You know, the guys were making mistakes. Guys were making pre-snap penalties and things like that. And he was, get him off the field, yanked him off the field, yelled at guys coming off the field. So, I mean, you're not going to get the colorful language you get with O'Brien, but Cully's definitely a guy who doesn't take to mistakes very well. I think that where the rubber meets the road is how accountable he's going to hold guys, you know, for that during – I mean, it's tough to ascertain that during training camp as to if it's bluster or if it's actually something that if a guy were to do this repeatedly during the regular season, is he going to be held accountable for that? So that kind of remains to be seen. But I would say that was the first time where we looked at David Cully that Saturday night a couple weeks ago where we're like, okay, well, that's, you know, that was, you know, that's something that we, you know, that's a side of him that had not been portrayed yet. To that point, the only sides that had been portrayed were, boy, this is one of 32 jobs. I'm really happy to have this job. The McNairs are awesome. And then bumbling through a bunch of Deshaun questions. You know what I mean? Like just like, you know, handling a Deshaun question like you just got handed a coked up porcupine or something. You know? So those are the only impressions we had. So I think it was really encouraging to see that he had a side to him where he actually got mad. You know what I mean? Like he actually got angry with things.
Yeah, I think with O'Brien, one thing I always kind of felt about him is that he wasn't like a tough guy necessarily, but he cussed a lot to try and give up this air that like, you know, that's how he tried to get respect and to show that he was, you know, like a tough guy that you get to be worried about. And like, I think one thing that's cool, I think I've kind of, one of the things I've learned too as an adult is that the person who cusses and yells the most probably isn't like the toughest or most respectful guy. There's a reason that they act the way that they do, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You're talking about O'Brien, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the funny thing about that is like O'Brien put out this image. Yeah. Like, I'm going to curse and I'm going to be so tough and I'm going to yell. And yet it was the formula to crack getting into Bill O'Brien's good side was really, really easy. You know what I mean? Like for a guy who would just scream and yell and curse and portray this image of somebody who was going to hold people accountable. If you showed up at the building on time, if you stayed really late, if you thieved gym equipment and brought it to your house and didn't use it like Nick Martin, if you did good works in the community, like all these things, you know, like honestly, like basically if you were Nick Martin, just watch and see what Nick Martin and Whitney Mercilus did for the last 2 or 3 years. And I like both of those guys just fine, but they didn't deserve the contracts that they got. Like that's where you're totally right, Matt. Like there's a phoniness to it. You know what I mean? Like when you're just sitting there cursing and you're yelling and, but yet you have this really easy code to crack where you don't actually have to be good at football and you get treated like you're good at football. So I think, look, it's so early in the Cully and really let's call it the Cully and Caserio regime. Cause that's what it is. You know what I mean? Like everything that we're watching out of training camp is being far more, I think, orchestrated by Nick Caserio than it is by by David Culley. Like, I'm not saying that, like, David Culley has no say that goes on. He's the head coach, and on game day, he's the head coach and this and that. But Culley is much more the architect of the big picture of what we're seeing out there. So we'll find out more about what exactly accountability is and how this all gets executed once the regular season rolls around.
Sean, what is the meanest word that David Culley will say this season, and why is it jeepers?
Oh, I know. Yeah, I feel like we're at, like, Garrett Cole, like, whatever, for Pete's sake, you know, like something like that. Yeah, for Pete's sake, consarn it. That's what it's going to be. I gotta go to the internet and look up, like, interjections from rural Tennessee and see what they say there. That's what I got to go look up, and then I'll answer your question, Rivers. I got to go look that up. Whatever's on that page that jumps out at me, that's what it's going to be. He's a really nice man. I've yet to hear him curse at practice. I don't know if he's got that club in his bag or not.
Have we had a darn or a dad gummit or something?
Nothing.
Like that?
Not really? Nothing. But I'll say this: like, he doesn't yell a lot. Like, O'Brien would yell at practice. Culley doesn't yell a lot. Culley's a generally much more pleasant human being. And we're far enough away where we can't really hear the coaches. You know what I mean? Like, that's one different thing about this year. I mean, it's a different year. The last 2 years have been different because of COVID. I'm sure you guys have been out there when there's actually people other than us allowed out there before, where there's just a whole lot more access. We're kind of pigeonholed into this one little area way down at the end, towards the end zone of the two fields that are next to each other. So it's really hard for us to hear anything that the coaches are really saying to the players, unless they're near, you know, unless they're running a drill that's right next to us. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Sounds like watching ice hockey. How much Jack Easterby is there in training camp? Cause we saw those shots of, like, him lined up as a scout team defensive lineman with his visor on backward and that sort of thing. Is he on practice? Is he pretty involved?
He is. I don't know. Like, involved, like, he's out of practice. He's definitely near the team. He's walking around with papers in his hand. I don't know what's on the papers. Like, it could be doodles. It could be Bible verses. It could be actual football things. I have no idea. But he's walking around with bucket hat on. He is team bucket hat. He is team bald bucket hat guy. So he's walking around bucket hat, papers in hand. And he is, like, he's doing all the stuff you'd expect Easterby to do. Like, when they're in the stretching lines, he's walking around and hitting guys on the shoulder pads and doing all that stuff. So he's out there. He's probably closer to the team than most fans would want him to be. Like, I think most fans would hope that Jack Easterby's staying up in his office and doing football operations things. So he's out there. I don't think he's coaching the team or anything like that. I like to think that Nick Caserio is the one that's kind of running things at this point, and that Jack Easterby's doing all the things that are advertised in a football operations job, as opposed to all the things he was doing when Bill O'Brien was a general manager, which was kind of doing things in tandem with Bill O'Brien. And then when Bill O'Brien got fired, he was the GM for the rest of the season. I don't think that's the case anymore. But he's 100%. He's out there every day. He's not standing off to the side watching. He's close to the action. When they're running 11 on 11, he's standing there in the mix with all the other fringe people that are standing there. You know, players, coaches, he's right there standing with them. So I don't know what that all means, but my guess is that anybody listening to this podcast or watching this video probably doesn't like hearing that he's anywhere close to the team. So I can't deliver good news along those fronts as to him being out there or not. My hope is that whatever it is he's doing is something that's staying out of the way of Nick Caserio and David Culley.
Yeah, I'm glad that gives Rivers something else he can add to his database of the whole storage unit he has of Jack Easterby information.
Who's that? All the dabs.
Let's go.
Rivers has a whole storage unit of Jack Easterby information. So it's part of his ongoing investigation. So we had to ask him that.
It's in the F drive, actually.
I didn't really want to ask this because we try to be, I don't know, somewhat different than everybody else. But you know, there's fans every single time they get so tired of Deshaun Watson. Yeah. What's your kind of take on the Deshaun Watson situation? Is it, like, embarrassing to watch him out there at safety? Is it the way, like, he walks up on the field and does stuff on the sideline? Is it a distraction at all, or is it just kind of like what's expected with – it's kind of a bizarre situation that's unprecedented?
Yeah, I mean, I've been out there every day for it, so I'm happy to talk about it. I think the safety thing was a little overblown. Like, to me, him standing there with it – you know, he had on one of those shower caps on the helmet that they wear when they're doing special teams. He, like, honestly, to me – that was more like I was actually thinking, like, that's kind of cool of Deshaun to do. He's not actually playing safety in there, okay? Like, he's like they're not. It's not 11-on-11, and Deshaun is a scout team safety. It's literally they have a skeleton of like 9 guys on offense, and they're literally walking through certain formations, and they just need stand-ins out there to stand in the position of where the defense would be and certain things like that. So I'm like, when I say stand in, Deshaun is literally standing at safety and he's not moving. So it's not like they're running plays and he's running up there and he's doing thud, you know, and he's hitting guy, you know, like, so I think when that was happening, he's not doing that anymore in camp, by the way. When he was doing that was right at the beginning. And I think a lot of us, and I'll admit, I was just as guilty of anybody as tweeting about Deshaun doing stand in work at safety and that stuff. Like, in retrospect, it wasn't that big a deal. I think the overriding thing, Matt, that you're asking about is just him being out there and, like, what's the distraction been like? How awkward has it been? So I would say this. It's been awkward for sure. Even 2 days ago or yesterday, it might have been, I think it was yesterday, when he was doing all the footwork drills and stuff on a side field and everybody else was working out. It's just really weird, especially in light of the news that's come out over the last 4 or 5 days. It just feels heavier on the legal side than it's been. Seeing him out there yesterday was a little bit strange. As far as the distraction goes, I don't think the team's distracted at all. Like, the team is getting, you know, the team is just doing their stuff. You know what I mean? And Deshaun, sometimes he'll stand really far away from the team. Sometimes he's standing near the team and he's chit-chatting with coaches or other players. They don't seem to have any animosity towards him. He doesn't seem to have any animosity towards them. And that's up to and including Cully and Caserio. I think everybody's kind of settled into a place where they understand what the situation is. I think both sides want out of this situation. I think the talk that we heard from Jake Glazer and others a few weeks ago that they're trying to make up with Deshaun, or they want him to be the starting quarterback in week one, or whatever they want. They still want him to be the quarterback of the team. This is just me observing behavior and talking to people and things like that. I don't believe that for one second at all. I think both sides want out of the situation. Honestly, we are more distracted as media members with Deshaun than any of his teammates are. The team's not distracted at all. I can't speak for what's going on in their heads. They don't operate like people who are distracted by Deshaun being there one bit. You know, the practices run smoothly. They run crisply. I don't think it's been a big distraction. It's been really awkward to observe. And it's kind of sad. I think, like, that's my overriding emotion in the whole thing, guys, is that it's just, to me, and especially that first day, when he was standing back there at safety, and again, it's not one of those things like you're playing safety, but the fact that you have this guy who has provided more highlights in 3 or 4 years for this team than any other player has over the course of their career, like next level highlights that nobody else can do, at the most important position in football, that was him the last 3 years, that he carried this team to the best of his ability the last 3 years. And now here we are in 2021, and he's got a shower cap on his head, and he's standing there bored in a skeleton defensive formation in a walkthrough. To me, it was just sad. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, when does this happen with a franchise quarterback? And whether it's the team's fault or now Deshaun's fault with all the legal stuff, it's probably a combination of the two things. I was just sad more than anything else in watching it, more so than awkwardness or anger or anything else. I'm like, man, this just sucks. It just sucks, you know?
Yeah. Even like a player of Watson caliber, like a top five quarterback. He had the ACL injury in 2017, and playing for Bill O'Brien, like, I feel like we still don't even know how good he could, you know, really possibly be. And now coming into this year where, you know, like, we know he's a top five quarterback for sure. He may not have even played all this season. Yeah. And so, like, I really can't think of a young quarterback who, like, has had so much of his, like, potential and career wasted in, like, the span of 6 years like he has. Like, you can really kind of make the case that maybe, you know, half of his seasons have, you know, really haven't really kind of amounted to as much as maybe they could have been in a different situation or a different team or different injury luck or a different coaching staff or, you know, whatever else.
Yeah. I would say the only thing, as you kind of talk through what you were saying there, the only one I can think of is Michael Vick. And that's because of obviously totally, well, like, I mean, the legal stuff, I guess, kind of different reasons, but, like, really, honestly, totally, like, he literally went to prison. Like, that's the only one. But you're talking about just from purely a football standpoint, Like, yeah, could you have asked for a quarterback that good to step into a situation that wound up being as bad as it wound up being at the, you know, toward, like, and honestly, like, the first 2 or 3 years was pretty normal football stuff. Like, he got injured, the team was bad, they fired the GM, they brought in a new GM who did some decent things. From really the beginning of 2019 on, he was plunked down in a situation where he's having to try to carry on his shoulders one of the most weird, bizarre, dysfunctional, inept situations that you could ever find with a football player. Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right.
Rivers, do you have any burning training camp questions you have for Sean at all?
Well, not really a training camp question per se, but Sean, you talked to Nick Asario a lot. You guys have interviewed him a couple of times. I guess as somebody who only gets press clippings, what's this guy like as a person? What do you guys talk about when the cameras aren't rolling?
Yeah, he's very cool when the cameras aren't rolling. The interviews that we've done out of camp, those are the only times that the times that we've spent with him when we haven't been on the air, we did a few Zooms with him. So we had like 5 minutes before and then 5 minutes after. And then during camp, he would show up during the break leading into Seth and I probably spent a total of about 30 minutes with him, like outside of being on, when you add it all up, you know what I mean? So I say all that to say we've probably spent more time like that with him than any other media members in town up to this point. But it's not like we've, you know, gone out to dinner with him or spent a weekend in Vegas with him or something like that. So, I mean, my observations are coming off a very limited framework, but it's probably a bigger framework than any other media member has. And I'll say this, he's incredibly friendly. He connects very well with Seth when he sits there off the air with us, because Seth's a former football player who Nick has scouted before. You know what I mean? Like, that was the first time we were ever on a Zoom with each other. First time we were ever on a Zoom with each other, that was one of the things that came up. You know, that was the icebreaker. It was Nick's like, oh, yeah, Seth, I got old scouting reports of you. so he's very very cool. You know what I mean? Like, I think people get frustrated sometimes with some of his answers to the questions we ask, but I don't think that's anything that people find unpredictable at all. You know what I mean? Considering where he comes from, considering the sensitivity of some of the questions that we're asking him, you know, the Deshaun questions, he's actually, it's the ironic thing about it, Rivers, is that I think in the last few interviews we've done with him, the stuff that's come out of it that's very usable from a content standpoint has been about Deshaun. You know what I mean? Like, he's actually, and I don't know if it's intentional or inadvertent, but a couple of interviews ago with him was when he said, we're going to make a decision by training camp with this or whatever. And I don't know. It doesn't look like they've made any sort of decision with Deshaun other than to allow him to practice. But at that time, we were a month removed from training camp. That got a lot of traction. When he said Deshaun's not going to Green Bay, that got a lot of traction because that was the first we'd heard that Deshaun wasn't traveling with the team. So ironically, the things he's given us that have turned into actual news have been about Deshaun. But I like him so far. I off the air, I like him fine. He's very friendly. He loves Houston. We talk about that a lot, you know, family moving in and things like that, his kids. I like him. I'm rooting for him. I think he strikes me as somebody who's very smart. He's obviously, you know, the apprenticeship that he's had in the last 20 years has probably prepared him as well as anybody for what I don't know that anybody could be fully prepared for what he was walking into. You know, like one of the questions I asked him in one of our training camp interviews with him was about welcome to the NFL moments. And that was it was a short answer, but it was one of the most honest moments that he had in the interview, where I said, what was your welcome to being a GM moment? And he laughs, he goes, oh, the first 24 hours, you know, like sort of acknowledging how unique the whole Deshaun, because we all remember that was when Deshaun immediately, like when Nick Casario got hired, within 24 hours, it's the rap lyrics and it's the trade request and it's everything. By the time Nick's sitting in that chair on that Friday of that week, we got 48 hours worth of bubbling trade rumors going on with Deshaun Watson. So I enjoy him. I'll say this about Nick compared to his predecessors. Nick has done more interviews with Sports Radio 610 in the, what are we at now? 8 months he's been the GM. We're coming up on 8 months. It'll be 8 months next week that he's been the GM. He's done more interview, and I'm not talking Texans radio. I just want to separate church and state here. And no disrespect to Texans radio, but it's different doing stuff in-house than it is doing stuff on the station.
Yeah.
He's done more interviews on Sports Radio 610 in the 8 months that he's been here than all the GMs I've covered. And I go back to 2007, so I can't speak to Casterly. I think Casterly did a weekly hit with John and Lance back in the day. So Casterly was a very media-friendly GM. But from Rick Smith in 2006 all the way to Bill O'Brien, or as Seth and I call the GM version of him, William O'Brien, from Rick Smith through William O'Brien, I think Nick Caserio has done more interviews on Sports Radio 610 in 8 months than all the GMs in that time frame, Smith, Gain, O'Brien, and I guess interim GM Easterby, than they did in 14 years. Yep. You know, so I give him credit for that. I think people get uptight sometimes that he's not just spilling all of his business out there. You know, we don't expect him to do, like, I don't expect him to do that. If we get a few usable answers out of him, you know, we asked him in one of the interviews, I asked him, hey, what's your policy on doing contracts in season? You know, because that was something that, you know, like they wouldn't do it. And he gave an honest answer. He gave a good answer to that. He's like, I don't ever pigeonhole myself into anything. I'll, you know, he basically said, I'll do contracts in season. You know, he didn't say it like that, but that was the usability of that answer. We got an honest answer out of him. So I don't expect him to put all of his cards on the table, but it's a long way to answer the question, Rivers. And I like him. He's been very affable off of the air. And, you know, I think once this Deshaun thing gets behind them in some shape, form, or fashion, then you know, and the rebuild really starts to kick in, then maybe we'll be able to drill in a little more clarity with him. That's my hope. But I like him, and you know, hoping we get to do more stuff with him.
Given the fact that he's notoriously hard to find food for, where would you hope to drag him to as far as restaurants go in town?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. That's a good question. A couple things. One, we have to get him to a barbecue place. It's just criminal that he hasn't eaten barbecue yet. And we're already thinking we already have him giving $100 to a listener at some point here in the next week or so because of his he proposed it, like putting a poll up about the number of transactions. So I'll credit him with that too. He agreed when we approached him. He agreed to give $100 to one of our listeners that a yet to be determined listener. So that's going to happen. So you know, so that's actually pretty cool. So barbecue for sure. We got to get him to eat barbecue so he can check that off the list, so he doesn't have to hear about that anymore. He says that he told us his mom used to make delicious Italian food. So we got to get him to a good Italian place for sure. And then I want to get him. There's an all you can eat Korean barbecue downtown. I want to see what someone who's in shape like that, how they treat an all you can eat place. You know what I mean? I want to see if he has a gear or a club in his bag where he actually cuts loose a little. I want to see I don't need the restrictor plate of a menu where you're ordering a specific thing and you pay $39 for it. I want to give him the open-ended all you can eat and see how he accepts that challenge.
But you can compare that to how he would work if it was uncapped for some reason.
Yes. Yes. 100%. Well, yeah, no. And you know what? I need Landry Locker sitting with me for that, because Landry would turn that into 2 hours of radio, like based on how Nick Caserio handled an all you can eat barbecue. This is how he's going to construct the roster for the next 3 years. 100%.
So I have a very important question for you. How beautiful was Cahali Waring in person?
I said this about Cahali Waring when he was a rookie. I looked at him at camp and I said two things. One, he's glorious. Like he's statuesque. And I say that as a, you know, as a happily married man to him. I also said this, I said, you know, if we had to pick one of these Texans, if the aliens came down and they landed right over there at the Methodist Training Center and we had to fight them off, but we had 10 minutes to clone one of the Texans to defend us, I would pick Cahali Waring. Like that dude looks like, now it could be that we clone him and then we learn that he just can't fight at all. Like, you know, like when it's like when Michael in The Office picks Stanley to be on the basketball team
Yeah.
Basically just purely because of judging a book by its cover. And then they get out there and Stanley dribbles, like he slaps the ball like, oh my God, I can't play. You look like you're supposed to be able to dribble a basketball. Cahali Waring looks like he's supposed to be able to whoop some ass. I don't know if he can, but that was the guy. So Matt, I say all that to say, like, he looks glorious. That said, he ain't making the team. He'll go look glorious in somebody else's practice squad.
I'm hoping for Cincinnati. I think he'd be good in Cincinnati.
Maybe so. Is James Casey still coaching tight ends there?
I know he's coaching tight ends somewhere. I can't remember where, though.
Well, it was – he was definitely coaching them in Cincinnati. I just – you know how this stuff changes year to year.
Yeah.
But he – yeah, so Cincinnati, huh?
That's what I'm hoping, because they have, I think, Drew Sample, and they have one other tight end there.
There's room.
I think there's room for him there. I think there's a – and he can hang out with Xavier again over there.
There you go. DJ Reader.
And I think Joe Burrow needs somebody they can throw a pass in the flat, like get the ball in 1.1 seconds, and he can get 3 yards, you know?
There you go.
James Casey still gets paychecks from the Cincinnati Bengals as a coach.
Even better.
There you go.
Even better. So, Sean, we read your 53-man article prediction today. And kind of the biggest thing that we kind of took away from, I know Rivers tweeted this too, was that you don't have Shaq Lawson making the roster. Is this because of what you're seeing in training camp, or the fact that he played well into the third quarter of the preseason game against the Packers, or like what he did kind of Miami, where it was his most productive season high blitz defense, where he didn't really like have like a high level pass rush, like one versus one, you know, block win. So what was kind of your thoughts on the Lawson decision on that?
Well, the Miami part. Look, you guys are much better at watching around the league than watching it through a prism of really educated eyes than I am. You guys all do such a great job. So the Miami stuff, it has nothing to do with it. Yes, playing in the third quarter of a preseason game, just like logically, is not something as a defensive end is not so, when every other veteran is over there with their shoulder pads off, you know, that's in his salary range. And he hasn't played the whole game. You know what I mean? All of a sudden get in there, Shaq. That's not a good sign, but it matches what we've seen out of camp. There have been so many times out of camp where we're like, is Shaq Lawson practicing today? Is he practicing? Mm-hmm. Like probably more than any other defensive player that kind of registers with us, you know, like defensive player that came into training camp with some sort of name recognition. It's hard to find some of those. It's hard to find him. He doesn't flash much at all. And so I just haven't seen much out of him. Like, ultimately, is he going to make the 53? He may. Like, to me, it came down to Shaq Lawson or Whitney Mercilus on the defensive line. And I just picked Whitney to stay on the team because the dead cap money hit is less than it is for Shaq Lawson. Like, neither of them are good to cut right now, you know, according to the salary sites that I looked at. Like, Shaq would be – you'd be upside down by about $5 million. Whitney, you'd be upside down by about $7 million. But neither of them are playing right now like they deserve to be on the football team. And I think, you know, there's actually decent competition along the defensive front with this team. You know, all the outside linebackers are now listed as defensive linemen. But there's, you know, there's a lot of guys that are playing, you know, that's one of those positions where I think whatever the vision is for Caserio is coming to fruition, which is we got all these guys on 1 year deals. You know, they got Vincent Taylor and they got Malik Collins and they, you know, even guys like Ross Blacklock, who's not on a, you know, he's not in a contract year, but he's in the second year. And I think he's like a lot of these younger players who feel like they've got a new lease on life with a different coaching staff and a better scheme and on both sides of the ball. So I have Shaq Lawson off of there right now just because I just looked purely at the guys that have flashed in training camp. I looked at guys who, when I talk to people who are, you know, who are literally able to see every down, whose opinions I respect, when I talk to folks like that, what they're seeing, I combine all of it. And you know, look, Shaq could go out tomorrow against the Cowboys and do some things and I'll have him back on the 53. But like, as of right now, I just had a really hard time. Cap hit be damned. I had a really hard time based on what I've seen and based on what the team has invested in him. You know what I mean? Like, people are going to go, well, they traded Bernhardrick McKinney for him. And I say, well, they were going to cut Bernhardrick McKinney. You know what I mean? This is a Akeem Dent, TJ Yates situation going on where, you know, these guys were going to, you know, probably both get, I don't know if Shaq Lawson was getting cut, but the Dolphins were clearly out on Shaq Lawson. So, Yeah, I mean, long answer to it, but I thought about it for a little bit, you know. It was one of the ones that Seth and I did today. We did last four in, first four out on the 53-man roster today at different positions. For the 53, the last four in all corresponded to somebody who was in the first four out. So I had Whitney as the last one in on the defensive line, and I had Shaq Lawson as the first one out on the defensive line. And I didn't have a big problem with it based on what I'd seen.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because like when the trade was made, the idea was that like this is be their first like good edge rusher, or the number one edge rusher, and like everything from Lawson we've seen before, it's that you want him to be like maybe your third best pass rusher, and you'd be okay in that situation. And so for him to be like the idea of going to the training camp from being the best pass rusher on the roster to you being cut completely is really interesting and surprising to hear.
Yeah, I think if they're going to generate a pass rush this year that's even remotely decent, and obviously there's no J.J. Watt anymore, so they've got big shoes to fill. I think it's going to come from – I think it's – big picture, I think it's going to come from numbers, where it's just they've got eight guys that they're rotating through there. The legs are fresher in the fourth quarter, and maybe they get some pressure from that. Other than that, you've got to get some – Charles Omenihu's got to take whatever the pressure stats that he's had for a smaller sample size. And he's either got to improve those over the amount of snaps he's getting, or he's got to play more snaps. So, like, improvement, like a menu, can he improve? Jacob Martin, I feel like we've been talking 2 years about, Jacob Martin will be the guy. Like, I don't know. But Jacob Martin, I don't think Whitney's coming back from the dead. Malik Collins has actually looked really good. But if I'm trying to generate a pass rush, do I want to count on somebody who you got to get an inside pass rush from? You know, like, I think he'll provide more pressure than the defensive linemen who they've had the last couple of years, but the interior guys they've had the last couple of years are geared towards Romeo's defense where they're, you know, that's not their role. So I think they're going to probably count on, you know, probably doing some blitzing and having some fresh legs in the front four. And we'll see what happens. There's no perfect solutions with this team. You know what I mean? Like there's no aha moment with the defense where you go, aha, there's where they go from 32nd to 10th. And like, they didn't, you know, it's not 2011. You know, they didn't draft J.J. Watt and draft Brooks Reed and sign Jonathan Joseph and sign Daniel Manning and get Connor Barwin back from having his foot torn off his leg and all that stuff. Like, there's just – they're piecing it together. And they'll be better than they were last year because, A, they can't be worse than they were last year. And, B, I do think that they look like they know what they're doing so far in Lovie's scheme. Like, I do – I was skeptical about Lovie Smith just because I'd watched a lot of Illinois football over the last few years, and I just felt like, man, he's under the hill.
Jeez, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Right, Rivers. Yeah. So I think there's something to be said. Like, okay, well, now he's just the DC. It's been a long time since he's been just the DC, and maybe you know he's getting to sink his hands into. He doesn't have to worry about offense or recruiting or any of these other things. He can just coach defense, and they do look like they're grasping it. And the assistant coaches on both sides of the ball. Look like they just – I'm just observationally look like they're better teachers than what O'Brien had. You know what I mean? Like O'Brien on the offensive side, he's got a bunch of his old buddies there. You know, John Perry and Lawing. And Tim Kelly staying is one of the more miraculous things. But Tim Kelly's kind of acting and conducting himself like a different guy. Like he looks like a guy who feels really happy that Bill O'Brien's not there anymore. So maybe he spreads his – I don't know. But – yeah, we'll see what happens.
So I've one last question for you. And so like training camp, very rarely is there a player who has like a great camp and they're a great preseason and it kind of carries on the regular season and you kind of point to like, oh, this moment in your training camp or preseason where like, you kind of got it. Like it usually happens, you know, before that point in time. Is there somebody though, that being said, is there somebody in training camp that you've been watching in the preseason who you're really excited for this upcoming season? That may surprise some people. I do have a sleeper hit in your pocket.
Ooh, a sleeper. Okay. I feel like it's almost tough for it to be a sleeper because we talk about this stuff every day on our show. Like, Charlie Heck might start at right tackle. Well, we've talked about Charlie Heck every day. Like, you know, so a sleeper. That's a good one. A sleeper. Like, I'll say this. Like, the wide receivers – I mean, we've talked about Nico Collins a lot. I think Nico Collins, all the rookies, okay, I'll say this. All the rookies, other than Davis Mills, who's sort of a separate case, and Davis Mills has gotten better over the last week or so, but all the rookies are playing, like, around above where they were drafted. You know what I mean? Like, Collins looks more like a second rounder. Brevin Jordan looks more like a third or fourth round. You know, like Roy Lopez is going to be a rotational defensive lineman for this team, and he deserves to be. He's done a lot of good things so far in training camp, and Garrett Wallow's looked okay. So I think people will be pleasantly surprised. I'm not saying they're going to go out and light the world on fire, although Nico Collins is going to start for this team, I think. So I like what the rookies have done so far. Like Chris Conley's looked really, really good in camp and in the game. Like he's looked really good in camp. And he did some good things in that game against the Green Bay Packers. So I would say that, you know, Chris Conley is a guy that is gonna be better than what he's been at his other, you know, sort of journeyman stops that he's been at so far. On the defensive side of the ball, let me think. You know, like Malik Collins has looked really good. Jordan Jenkins has flashed the time. I'll tell you what, like, I mean, it's a big year for him, but Justin Reed has had a great, like a really, really good camp. I mean, he's obviously somebody the Texan fans know, but I think it's a real key for Caserio to find something in these last few draft classes that he can feel good about keeping around for a second go around here, you know, like a second contract. And Justin Reed has had a really good camp, and everything that Seth talks about with Justin Reed seems to indicate he's a much better fit for what Lovie Smith wants to do with him than what Anthony Weaver and Romeo Crennel wanted to do with him. So, I mean, I'm probably bringing up some names that everybody's seen on Twitter and heard us talking about on the radio and stuff like that. But those are the ones, like when I think of reasons that I'm optimistic, and when I say optimistic, I'm talking like they'll go over their win total, that kind of thing. I was on a station in Nashville yesterday, and they said, so what, they asked me a bunch of things about Deshaun and whatever. And then they said, well, I didn't think the Texans are going to do this year. And I said, well, it'd be pretty boring if I came on your show and said, well, here, they're going to go 2-15. So I'm going to tell you why I think they could be much better than that. You know, like why I think they could win 5 or 6 games this year and go over their win total. And I got done with my answer and they thought that I was high. You know what I mean? Like they were looking at the roster and they're like, are you kidding me? Like that. I'm looking at this. I don't know who these guys are. Your best player is Laremy Tunsil. Your quarterback's getting sued by 22 people. Like all these things that are swirling around the team, and just the sheer underwhelmingness of the roster. But I do feel like there are reasons. Like I mean, see, it's the way the NFL works. You guys know this. Like every team, in my opinion, every team has a window, right? And it's like a 4-win window. And like if you hit your ceiling, you're 11 wins. And if you hit your floor, you're a 7-win team. You know, if you hit your ceiling, you're a 13-win team. If you hit your floor, you're a 9-win team. I think that's the gambler in me. You know what I mean? Like you guys are much better at like looking at the X's and O's in the film and stuff like that than I am. You guys do an awesome job with that. I'm the gambler who looks at it and just looks at the talent and the roster and how I see it with my eyes. And that's just generally how it's worked through the years. And so my window for the Texans is like the floor is 2 wins and the ceiling is 6 wins. And I think there's reasons that they could get to 6 wins. That was what I was trying to tell the people in Nashville. And it's kind of my answer to your question here, which is if I think they're going to get to 6 wins, obviously I think Tyrod Taylor needs to take care of business against other quarterbacks who are at his level or lower. And they play a lot of those this year. The quarterback slate that they're playing is not murderer's row. Like there's a few good ones, but it's a lot of rookies and a lot of average quarterbacks. So there's that. And then there's just other players who I think, you know, I think if the coaching staff develops some of the guys who are in 2018, 2019, and 2020 draft classes, if they come away with 3 guys in each of those classes that they feel good about, you know what I mean? There's only 3 left in the 2018 one. But right now, Justin Reed is your starting safety. Jordan Akins is one of your 2 top tight ends. And Kiki Kuti's had a really good camp. And he's been your starting slot receiver so far. In 2019, Titus Howard, Max Sharping, both starting on the offensive line. Lonnie Johnson's had a really good camp. And Charles Omenihu has been a guy who's flashed in previous years, and he's had a good camp. In 2020 class, Blacklock looks like a different player. Charlie Heck looks like a different player. And Jonathan Grenard looks like a different player, but not to the level of those other two. But we'll see what happens. You know what I mean? So that's the glass half full point of view. And so I think those are things, and you don't need all of them to play out, but if some of them or most of them play out, then the team's going to be better. And I think they're going to be competitive. I think they're going to be more competitive than people expect them to be, largely because it's not a young team. It's a veteran team. And I think Tyrod Taylor's the type of quarterback who's going to let him hang around in some games. I don't know if he's going to make – I know he won't make the plays Deshaun was making, especially downfield. But he's not somebody who – you know, Tyrod Taylor's not going to have a game where he turns the ball over three times, and that's why you lose the game. You know, if you lose a game that Tyrod Taylor's quarterbacking, it's just because he could only put 17 points on the board. It's not because he's handed 14 points to the other team. You know what I mean? So long answer to your question, Matt, but I think somewhere in there I think I – gave a few names of guys to that I'm optimistic about.
You're very kind to talk about how you don't know as much as us. But at the same time, you brought that Akeem Dent trade, and I'm still reeling. I'm looking up Jason Snelling on Pro Football Reference right now.
That's funny.
Well, Sean, we know that you're a man who has good weekends and everything, and so we'll let you enjoy the rest of your Friday night. But thanks for coming on. It's been very enlightening, and you know, it's hard, you know, from the point of view that we have these windows that we look out into to have some kind of idea of like how training camp's going, how preseason's going, and it's a lot of just like eating other people's regurgitation, you know. Yeah. And so it's been very. I feel like this like the I've learned more in 40 minutes than I have in the last, you know, 4 weeks of reading other people's stuff, you know.
Yeah, well, thank you. I appreciate you guys. You guys doing all of you guys do an awesome job. And you know, that's I tweeted this a few weeks ago, but we're really lucky in this town to have people who cover the team outside of us and the radio and things like that. Guys like all of you who cover the team and do such a great job in the blogging and the podcast world and things like that is really it's helpful to me. It makes me a lot smarter. So I appreciate you guys. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. It was very kind. You are tough, smart, dependable, and selfless. I'm glad that you have all four.
And hey, I am the first one in to the building every day. I'm not the last one to leave. I promise you that. But I'm halfway there. I am the first one in the building every day.
We love it. Well, enjoy your night. Have fun watching the Saints Newark trailer. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. So yeah. Oh, dude. Okay. You got to have me back on to talk about that. Sometime.
For sure. Whenever the movie comes out, we'll talk about it. We'll do a whole show.
I'm in. Y'all have a great weekend. Thanks for having me on. And we'll talk soon.
Bye. Keep up the great work. Okay. Appreciate it, man.
All right. See ya.
This episode is brought to you by Fallout 76, the post-nuclear RPG from Bethesda Game Studios. Explore the wasteland alone or with friends as you meet unique characters, complete exciting quests, and face dangerous foes. Take a stroll along the Atlantic City boardwalk in the latest update. Play Fallout 76 for free now through April 18. Available on Xbox, PlayStation, and Steam. Visit fallout.com to learn more. Rated M for mature.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.